Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin.
So when we think of Earth Day, we think of spending the day planting trees and picking up trash, recycling. And although it's really important, it is a small impact on this greater problem that we have regarding pollution, regarding fossil fuels. So focusing more on advocacy to create this larger change that has this bigger impact on our climate and subsequently our Earth.
Hello and welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I'm your host, Ike Evans, and today we're delighted to bring you episode 131, Climate Anxiety and Young People. For a lot of reasons, in 2022, it is surprisingly hard for any news related to climate change to get a grip on people's attention. But you may want to pay attention to this. Just last week, four climate scientists were arrested for locking themselves to an entrance to the J.P. Morgan Chase building in downtown Los Angeles. The action was part of an international campaign called Scientist Rebellion, involving more than 1,200 scientists in 26 countries. The day of action came hot on the heels of a report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change Working Group 3, which details the enormous gap between the mitigation that we need to do to avoid disaster and what we're actually doing. So folks, however you slice it, climate change is an existential threat that's hard to wrap your head around, and it shows in the mental health effects. A poll by the American Psychiatric Association released this month found that almost 60% of adults in the U.S. agree that climate change is impacting the health of Americans. More than half of those surveyed reported feeling anxious about the effects of climate change on the planet. But that's only part of the story. Across all of their poll questions, younger adults expressed greater concern than older adults. Of those aged 18 to 34, two-thirds report feeling anxious about the effects of climate change, compared with half of adults 65 years and older. Additionally, 51% of respondents aged 18 to 34 were anxious about the impact of climate change on their mental health, compared to just 24% of respondents 65 years and older. And finally, adults aged 18 to 34 were also more likely to say they believed climate change was already impacting the mental health of Americans, with 57% answering in the affirmative, compared with 41% for adults 65 years or older. This is far from the only evidence that young people are carrying more of the burden. All across the country, young people are bearing witness to the impacts of climate change on their mental health and on their futures. Our guests for today are Esmeralda Gonzalez, who is a first-generation graduate from the University of Texas at Austin, where she earned a BA in Health and Society and a minor in Business Administration. She is the Houston Environmental Justice Organizer for Mi Familia Vota, and joining her is Angelica Razzo, the Texas Director for Mi Familia Vota. She first joined the organization in 2017 to lead the organization's youth leadership program in Houston. Esmeralda and Angie, I am so glad that you could join us.
Thank you for having us. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to be here.
So my first question is for the both of you. I was just curious how you two know each other and how it is that you work together.
I would really love for you to take that question first, and then I can fill in the gaps.
Yes, absolutely. So I know Angie through our organizing efforts with Mi Familia Vota, where she is the state director for the state of Texas. And I am interning with Mi Familia Vota under the environmental justice department, where I work closely with her and other organizers in our efforts for Latino political engagement.
Yeah, and just to follow up to that, it's just been really great to increase our capacity for environmental justice advocacy and organizing on the ground. We can talk a little bit more later on about what we're doing, but we're really finding out like it's strategy, it's planning, it's execution, it's on the ground. There's so many different facets of it. And so just really glad that like now Mi Familia Vota is at a place where EJ is really one of our largest programs and buckets of work.
Episode will be coming out around Earth Day. And so I'd like for you to imagine a world in which you were running Earth Day. What would change about the overall message and what sorts of things would be emphasized most strongly?
Oh, man, this is a really awesome question. I think I'm going to continue to reflect on this after our conversation. I think what really comes to mind is like Earth Day is a moment within a movement versus just a moment and just a day. And so if I was running Earth Day, I really would think about like the two different spectrums in terms of like people really celebrating and being in community and enjoying the Earth's resources and everything that, you know, because we are, you know, we live on this planet, like what it's given us, and to really recognize that and to share that with one another. And then on the other spectrum, I think it would be this sense of urgency and drive for innovation and this combination of like natural resources and innovations in this next era of technology, where we don't have to sacrifice one over the other to get into this safe place where the earth is not constantly burning and we feel like our presence here isn't a threat to earth. And so I think of those two spectrums and struggling to see where you really bring people together with that in mind for Earth Day, again, being a day that's just the moment in a larger movement.
Yeah, I want to reflect a little bit on what Angie said about how it's a moment, it's like one day out of the year that we focus a lot on our planet. I would want to change the message to make it something more like with longevity. So not only is it this one day that we're focusing on our earth and appreciating what we have and protecting it, but extending that throughout the year, as well as focusing more on a macro scale versus on a micro scale. So when we think of Earth Day, we think of spending the day planting trees and picking up trash, recycling. And although it's really important, it is a small impact on this greater problem that we have regarding pollution, regarding fossil fuels. So focusing more on advocacy to create this larger change that has this bigger impact on our climate and subsequently our earth.
Angie, you are Texas director of Mi Familia Vota. I would love it if you could give our listeners a general idea of the, you know, the wonderful work that your organization is doing in the Houston area with respect to environmental justice.
Yeah, and I'll take a step back and say that our mission is to increase political power and representation in the Latinx community and the immigrant community. And so we do that through increasing the electorate, so voter registration, making sure folks are aware about the elections, know why those elections matter to them. And more on the advocacy side, we really started to engage on environmental justice really at all levels of government. So locally, we're part of a campaign and in coalition with other partners that is really seeking to weatherize local community members' houses. And so we're thinking about like Houston is really on the front line of increasing climate disasters. And those folks who are already marginalized continue to be compounded by these disasters that are really messing up their neighborhoods and their homes. And like disaster relief is not coming fast enough to them. So to really create a network of resiliency and physically weatherizing and retrofitting their homes so they can be a little bit more prepared for the next disaster. So it's one campaign we're working on. At the state level, TCEQ, the Texas Commission of Environmental Quality, which is our state level EPA, is undergoing review. And so it's really important for us that this huge state agency that really has their hands in a lot of different environmental issues, that the agency is built to serve the community, particularly of Houstonians through our campaign, but really all of Texans. And so as they're going through this review process, 2022 is really the year where we need to be providing public comment about how we want this agency to step up and be built in a way that it's serving the community. So next year, when we have our Texas legislative session, the legislative body can take that into review and really ensure that the next phase of TCEQ is one that's responsive and respective of what Texans are saying. And then we're going to start engaging locally in one of our suburban counties and looking to shut down a coal plant that's emitting just so much pollution into the air, but really making sure that the Latino community, which has been historically disengaged in that area, is really owning that campaign, is aware of it, and is putting their own spin to it, and just being culturally competent around how we're approaching this issue. And then just federally, we want to start engaging on the Clean Water Act, knowing that Texas is usually left off when we're talking about protecting waters and rivers and streams, just because we don't have a state level body that's really taking that into consideration. So we really need the federal support through the Clean Water Act to make sure that some of our bodies of water that had been removed from the Clean Water Act are now being reinstated.
So another thing that I'm wondering then is the what strategies that you use to make a huge global issue like climate change locally visible and real, you know, to people who have myriad other problems and concerns in their lives.
Yeah, the initiative that we have that's just really exciting is we're going to do a multi-phase research project, and it's focused on Latino perspectives on climate change. So we've identified some subgroups, which are young people, parents and community members, frontline workers, and also energy and oil gas sector workers. The focus groups are going to be some in English, some completely in Spanish, but the goal is really to understand how people are talking about climate change and using their own language and the issues that is really coming to their mind. And the environmental justice advocacy work, I mean, we can talk about this all day long. And sometimes we just miss the mark. You know, sometimes we get too technical. Sometimes we we get too negative. And so it's really important for us to, as environmental justice is becoming a growing program, that we pause and really take the time to listen from community members and go through a method in which we're gathering that those responses and then testing them. Because that's something that we want to be able to, you know, continue to have a strong message. But again, that's we're really using the language that people are using. Just from my own organizer experience, I started organizing about a year after Hurricane Harvey hit Houston. And so I saw a shift in how people started to talk about climate change, right? Climate change was something distant before Hurricane Harvey for a lot of the folks that I was engaging with, particularly young people. It was something that, yes, it's going to get worse. Yes, there's talks about this nationally and globally. But when Hurricane Harvey hit and the devastation that it left, I think for a lot of folks, it was kind of like, whoa, this is going to continue to happen again. This isn't just something out of the blue. This is actually a pattern we've seen reoccurring. And local leaders have just neglected the policies that they need to put in place to make Houstonians resilient against the climate crisis that is already at our doorstep, literally with flooding waters. And so when you think about the instances and how climate change might show up in people's lives and really listen to the issues that they're talking about, I think it's helped me as a former organizer and now more on the strategy side of, you know, how are we taking this very overwhelming problem, but making relevant to people and not just, again, in a very negative way, but trying to identify what are the tangible outcomes that we need to be achieving to increase people's quality of lives. I think the other one that has come up in a lot of my conversations is health. You know, that's just a big issue. Pollutants in the air, people that are like, it's just so weird that there's a higher rate of cancer in my neighborhood. Like, those are things that people might not come right out and say, but I think the great part about grassroots organizing is you get to know people and you get to speak to them honestly. And then you can thread out like, oh, wait, that's a real issue. And there's a real policy attached to that. And there's a decision maker attached to that frustration, that anger, that sadness that you feel. And so I think a lot of it is like, hear what people are going through, and then take them along this journey of them really identifying like the people that are responsible for their quality of life, the outcomes they're facing. And I think we're seeing that more and more with climate change. Again, just like it's in our backyards and it's not an issue that we can ignore anymore.
Okay, so these next few questions are for Esmeralda. And thank you for that, Angie. I have to frame this conversation in terms of mental health. And I know that, you know, that climate change, just because it so profoundly affects, you know, not just health at the individual level, but, you know, resilience at the community level. So it has all kinds of intersects with mental health. But especially, you know, this whole idea of climate anxiety as it affects young people especially. So I wonder how that shows up in your own life, and how do you, or have you, you know, articulated it to other people?
Yes. So climate anxiety is something that is very real, something I've seen in my community and my peers. And I related a lot to the consumption of media by specifically young people, where since at least I remember like the start of the pandemic and when the Black Lives Matter movement started, there's just been a shift in the way we relate news. So now you can find out so much more information on social media like Instagram, where there are like infographics where you learn about these issues happening all over the world. So you're constantly consuming this media of how these climate disasters are impacting people like across the globe. And it can take a toll on you when you go to like Starbucks and you go out to eat and you're handed a plastic straw or plastic silverware or a plastic bag. And you just think to yourself, wow, like I just saw a photo of a turtle with a plastic straw on its nose. And now here I am contributing to this problem. So it just creates an environment of anxiety where you go about your day, your week, your life, just worrying about the smallest things that you do and how it can impact someone across the world or right in your own backyard. And I've also seen it related to apathy. So not only about your individual actions, but how the world is shifting around you. So like I've heard terms that my friends use like, well, if we're not going to be around on this earth that long due to global warming, like what's the point of even getting a degree? Like why are we setting these long-term goals when there's a possibility that we won't ever be able to reach them due to climate change? So it's just a constant cycle of being hyper aware of your surroundings and what's going on and then the impact that it takes on your body and your mind.
I would love to know more about your goals as environmental justice organizer and how you're trying to go about achieving them.
Yes, absolutely. So my main goal is to be able to support the coordinator, the environmental justice coordinator, and whatever efforts that Mi Familia Vota has set. But my true goals rely in education. So like spreading information about how one can go about public testimony and show that this is not something that only people who have years of political experience can do. If you're interested or you have concerns, like you as a citizen of the state of Texas are entitled to be able to speak on your opinion in front of the legislature. So just informing my peers on that and what power they have. Not only my peers, but my community, the community of the state of Texas. This is just something that's very, very important to me.
I just want to jump in and just really hold on the point that, as Ms. said, like, it is so important to have people, all backgrounds of all ages, whether they have no political experience or not, getting involved in the work, because historically there has been so much intimidation and like just entering the spaces into the Texas legislative halls. like going into City Hall, like knowing who our representatives are. And so like, we really like peer-to-peer empowerment is so monumental. I think that's how we're really trying to build the movement. And I really just want to send the strong message, like you, like to be an organizer, you don't have to have a resume, you know, like to engage people, like they're like, you learn that on the spot. Like that's enthusiasm. That's like a desire for a better good. And so I think it's just really just breaking down these stereotypes of like, who is an advocate, who is a leader, and this culture shift that we were trying to really be part of in the Latino community, when like historically we've been secluded, isolated, and like literally had barriers put up, and like lack of intentional lack of education. And so I think what Esme is just saying is just very powerful.
Yeah, I totally agree with what Angie's saying. Like there is no one vision of what an advocate looks like. I remember my first time advocating in front of City Hall. I was 12 years old and I had no idea what was going on, but there was this teenager who worked with my older sister, and the union they were working with together, who really trained me and told me everything. It was very digestible for me as a child to like learn that this is what advocacy is, and there's not just one way to advocate. So starting off young and with a community of peers, like Andrew said, is very important. Just like one-on-one with people you know, it's just a lot more helpful to be able to advocate that way.
About you know, the opportunities for, you know, youth leadership that an issue like this presents. I mean, in your opinion, and I realize that, you know, that activism of any kind, I mean, it's a social activity, and you'll get along with some people and not others. But has it generally been the case that people have been receptive to your own wanting to claim the mantle of leadership, or have you ever sensed any resistance that you've had to overcome?
I believe that there's been more of like a let go of this issue and like having it be handled by the younger generation. They've been accepting of it, mainly because I've also heard arguments that, especially older populations, people who are over the age of 60, they feel as if their time on this earth is already up. And like, what's the point of them trying to make a difference or continue to advocate if they're not going to be here by the time that substantial change is done for like climate change to be impacted. So letting go and letting the young can have that, because it's something that's going to affect them more, I've seen is very, very common. But young people are also very enthusiastic and passionate about this issue because it is something that will impact us more in the future. So there is like an acceptance towards it and more of a want by the younger generation.
Do either of you have any personal stories from the community that testify to the impact that you're hoping to achieve?
Yeah, I can go back to the story I was mentioning in the question you asked me. So like I said, I want to focus on educating other people and creating advocates out of people who feel like they aren't able to because they don't know enough, they don't have the resources to, just like psyching themselves out of it. So like I mentioned earlier, I was an advocate for my mother and my sister, who both worked in the catering department at the Bush Intercontinental Airport here in Houston. So they needed someone who didn't look like an advocate to be able to speak up on this issue to make their story more impactful. So I was a child. I spoke about how, you know, this company is taking advantage of my mom and the heartbreak I see every day about how this company is treating her. And it really made a difference in the way these stories were told in front of City Hall and the way that they were received by the members of Houston City Council. So just looking back on the way that my experience began and how I felt empowered by other people and wanting to take that and create the same experience for others is something that is very dear to me and very important.
You know, I think a lot about some of the students that I got to work with several years ago and where they are in their lives now. There's a particular example of one of our youth leaders who had been with us for several years, and she was really interested in environmental justice, and she started to get more involved in more of our campaigns. Well, when the city of Houston released their climate action plan, there was a need that they, as they're executing this plan, like you're getting input from community members. And so they started setting up task force. And we pushed for one to be set up for young people. And so one of our youth leaders actually got to sit on the youth task force for the City of Houston's climate action plan. I think that's really powerful. That I think to me, when I think about ultimately political power and representation and organizing, is that folks that look like us, that have experiences, that are impacted, that are that they get to be part of the decision-making process. Like that is what power means to me. It's not just constantly fighting for your voice to be listened, but that you get to be the leading voice, and that you get to bring other people along with you. And so I think of some of our other students who have been like, I didn't know what civic engagement was. I didn't know why it was so important to have political power. I didn't know who my representatives were, and how they start to really change their life's trajectories in terms of like what they want to study in college, what type of internships they want to do, what type, you know, we have a lot of folks interested in journalism, what kind of journalism and what kind of narratives they want to get out there. Because that to me is contributing to this cultural change that we want to see in our society, where you see community members really coming into their own and using their own individuality to spotlight this issue and to inch us forward.
So it is my sense that the climate justice movement is probably more diverse, you know, than would have been the case, you know, back in the 90s, for example, both in terms of, you know, racial and ethnic diversity, or as we've been talking about, you know, the opportunities that there now are for younger people to take the reins. But do you have a sense, and I hope this isn't too much of a leading question, that there is still a ways to go in making climate change seem like it's something that is in particular relevant to, you know, to Black and brown communities?
Yes, absolutely. I'm currently a sociology student here at the University of Houston. So I do a lot of focus on disparities in our society and doing this research on the way climate impacts different communities, especially Black and brown ones, is related to socioeconomic status. So there is definitely some truth to that. And we can definitely uplift these voices and create a more impactful story or a more impactful argument to create a bigger importance on climate change by telling these stories, you know, going into these communities and asking, you know, why their children have higher rates of asthma, why there are more children who have cancer in these areas, and just how it's impacting everyone's day-to-day life.
Yeah, we definitely have a ways to go. And I celebrate those who have come before us to really allow us to now be leaders in the space. But I also think about for me, it would be just a darn shame if we had reached, you know, reduced carbon emissions and we had done all these great things and you still had disparities in communities in terms of education, in terms of income, in terms of health, in terms of who got to benefit from this new era that we're going to enter. So I think about like, as we're going into clean energy, what is the workforce development going to look like? You know, what is that just transition really look like? What do business owners, like, can we be part of owning those small businesses for clean energy? Are we talking about that with the students in our high schools? I mean, Texas and public schools, it's like 80% are folks of color, young people of color that are this the new generation of Texas. Texas doesn't look like what it looked like 50 years ago. And so I think like, as we're really dreaming big and thinking big and problem solving, like, are we being intentional at every single point along the way that impacted community members get to be part of those conversations and get to be the beneficiaries, not just the workers for this new era, but really the beneficiaries, because we've been doing this work. I think there's a lot of, I'm still learning a lot of the environmental justice organizing history that's existed in Texas, because it's been living in small workrooms and in staff rooms and different nonprofit siloed. And I really see us all coming together, starting to share this story, but really thinking deeply about like, what can we not repeat again? Like, what are we really going to leave at the door this time? So we're just doing something completely different. I also think democracy is like plays a really big part of that. Like, how are we changing democracy to also complement our organizing efforts? So there's still some ways to go, but I'm also just really thrilled at the conversations and action plans that are starting to form now to get us there.
My last question, what can people do who want to help?
You can volunteer with MFE, and I think like it's also like that's so important. Just get involved. I mean, this is a really big election year for us. That's a whole nother hour of podcast, right? Like, why are these elections relevant to environmental justice? And so our activity ranges from voter registration, voter education, like helping people along the voting process, showing up for campaigns, as Megan can talk a little bit more about the EJ activity, educating people, like, can you talk, like, what information can we give you so you can go and talk to another person, you know, and really just like meeting with our organizing team, and, you know, figuring out like, what time capacity do you have to give as an individual? And how can you be part of this just larger than life effort that's really happening across Texas?
Yes, I agree with what Angie said, mainly in educating people. There is so much power in numbers. So educating as many people as you can and having them be aware of this issue and empowered enough to be able to speak on it is extremely powerful in this movement. Just having this great big support. Additionally, testifying in front of the city council of the city of Houston and the legislative session in the state of Texas has been more accessible now than ever. You can just hop on a Zoom call for a few minutes and say what you have to say about how this is important to you and hop off. And that would have only taken like 5 or 10 minutes of your time. Not saying that it's the best system that we have yet. There are definitely some roadblocks in testifying for the session, but just getting involved, moving your feet, making your voice heard, talking to your friends about this, seeing what they have to say, and then looking for organizations in your community. And if you don't see any, create one yourself.
Yeah, so visit us at mifamiliavota.org. Just one last plug there.
So to everyone listening, for this Earth Day, get involved, or at least find out about what is happening locally in your communities. There's no such thing as not having an ability to contribute something to what people are doing, regardless of your level of expertise. Like Angie said, Angie and Esmeralda, we're really happy that you could find the time to talk to us. The Hawk Foundation thanks you, and best of luck with everything.
Thank you. Happy Earth Day, everyone.
Thank you so much. Happy Earth Day.
Environmental justice is also woven into the Hog Foundation's Communities of Care initiative. When we launched Communities of Care in 2018, we took the opportunity to support a project, Healthy Outdoor Communities Initiative, that works to advance the equitable use of public parks and green space to improve mental health outcomes and quality of life for underserved children and families in the Houston area. For episode 124 of Into the Fold, we talked to Sheila Savannah, Director of Prevention Institute, the organization that coordinates Communities of Care, and Kelly Burnett, Activation and Volunteer Manager of Houston Parks Board and Coordinator of Healthy Outdoor Communities. Here's a listen. My first question is for the both of you. It won't surprise most people that there's a disparity when it comes to access to outdoor spaces between Black people and other people of color and whites. So what does the evidence say about, you know, how stark the disparity is? And you can speak generally or just, you know, in terms of Houston and the consequences of the disparity.
Well, you know, we know that the value of parks and green space and healthy environment has a tremendous impact on health. So I think when we look at the health disparities, we have to also look at what have been the investments in those communities. So in Houston, there's the health department has data that shows it's it used to be almost a Y pattern that followed the freeway system. And now it's kind of changed to a, what they call an inverted C or arrow pattern. And there's just certain communities, you know, across the north end of the city, down the east, eastern corridor, and then in the southern portion of the city, and then a little bit toward Fort Bend and Gulfton and Ailey, that are communities that just struggle. And we also know that those are communities that have less trees, they have less large parks. And that you have to start looking at how that correlates to health outcomes. You know, it's been long known that people interact differently with parks and green space, but it has an impact on their health, whether they're running or walking or using it to gather or gardening or fishing. It just has all of these health benefits. And so I think when we look at those historic investments in parks, in green space, when we look at disproportionate placement of dumping sites locally, mm-hmm. we have to really think about how is that impacting the health of those communities. And that's why we're really glad to be partnering with Houston Parks Board, and they're the collaborative that they lead to try to change some of that here.
Yeah, I like that you start with talking about the environment and answering that question, because it's really easy to, I see it most often flipped, where people say, well, on our Bayou Greenways, why are the ones in certain neighborhoods always active and why are others not? Why are some communities embracing it? Why are some not? And you can look at the statistics of, you know, the health disparities, obesity and diabetes and all, and, you know, heart disease, some of these outcomes that we know exist, life expectancy, but it is more than just a choice. There's all these barriers that have added up decade over decade, sometimes nefarious, sometimes just by where it is. And I think it's going to take a lot of people, a lot of collaborations to be able to start to chip away at that, because the gaps are huge, 20-year life expectancy differences.
That is from episode 124, Changing the Landscape, People, Parks, and Power. Look for it in our catalog or just follow the link in today's show description wherever you get your podcasts. And that does it for this episode. We're so glad that you could join us. If you have comments on anything that you would like to share about the podcast, feel free to reach out to us at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu. Especially thoughtful comments will be acknowledged during a future episode. Production assistance by Anna Harris, Daryl Wiggins, Kate Rooney. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave a review, subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choice. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, or Stitcher, among many others. Thanks for joining us.